I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is June 28th, 2010. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's top story, Allah One, Jesus Nothing. A six-story Jesus statue in Ohio is struck by lightning. Police say lightning strike sets a six-story tall Ohio Jesus statue on fire and destroys it, but no one was hurt. The statue, with his arms raised along a highway, was struck by lightning in a thunderstorm Monday night and burned to the ground. My comment, this sounds like an atheist plot if ever there was one. You can't make stuff like this up. Even better, the Muslims must be going nuts. Here is the proof they have always waited for, that their God is the true invisible God. The article says, the King of Kings statue, one of Southwest Ohio's most familiar landmarks, had stood since 2004 at the Evangelical Solid Rock Church along Interstate 75 in Monroe, just north of Cincinnati. My comment. Did anyone ever consider that maybe God doesn't approve of Christians who violate the second commandment, so he sent them a little electric message? The article continues. The sculpture, 62 feet tall and 40 feet wide at the base, showed Jesus from the torso up and was nicknamed Touchdown Jesus because of the way the arms were raised, similar to a referee signaling a touchdown. My comment. I guess it's safe to assume that Touchdown Jesus won't be going for the extra point. It continues, it was made of plastic foam and fiberglass over a steel frame, which is all that remained early Tuesday. Comment, first the Jews crucify him, and then the Christians electrocute him. Hasn't this guy suffered enough yet? It continues, the fire spread from the statue to an adjacent amphitheater, but was confined to the attic area and no one was injured. Travelers on Interstate 75 often were startled to come upon the huge statue by the roadside, but many said America needs more symbols like it. My comment, I agree. It will give Allah more targets to shoot at. Continuing, so many people stopped at the church campus that church officials had to build a walkway to accommodate them all. The 4,000-member non-denominational church was founded by former horse trader Lawrence Bishop and his wife. Bishop said in 2004 he was trying to help people, not impress them with the statue. My comment, if he was trying to help them, why didn't he use the money to build a schoolhouse, a hospital wing, a shelter for the homeless? A six-story statue doesn't help anyone. Its only purpose is to impress. So much for Bishop's honesty. The article concludes, he said his wife proposed the Jesus figure as a beacon of hope and salvation, and they spent about $250,000 to finance it. Larry, next time don't be so cheap. I think God has made it pretty clear to you how he feels about being represented in plastic foam. And now we move to the science segment. Today's topic, red meat, is it hazardous to health? Red meat consumption has been linked to diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and several types of cancer, including breast, colorectal, stomach, bladder, prostate, and lymphoma. There are plausible mechanisms. Meat is a source of carcinogens, iron that may increase oxidative damage, and saturated fat. But correlation and plausibility are not enough to establish causation. Is red meat really dangerous? If so, how great is the risk? A couple of recent studies have tried to shed light on these questions, but they have raised more questions than they have answered. A new study in Circulation, Red and Processed Meat Consumption and Risk of Incident Coronary Heart Disease, Stroke, and Diabetes Mellitus, a systematic review and meta-analysis by Micah, Wallace, and Mozafarian, is a systematic review of the literature. It analyzed 17 prospective cohort studies and 3 case control studies with a total of 1.2 million subjects. As far as I can judge, it appears to be a well-done systematic review with excellent methodology and multiple precautions. They even looked for things like publication bias, which they did not find. They found that the consumption of processed meats, but not red meats, is associated with a higher incidence of coronary heart disease and diabetes. Processed meats include bacon, sausage, ham, hot dogs, salami, luncheon meat, and other cured meats. So now they're saying I can't have my hot dogs anymore? The increased risk per 50-gram serving of processed meats per day was 42% for heart disease and 19% for diabetes. Unprocessed red meats were not associated with coronary heart disease and were associated with a non-significant trend towards higher risk of diabetes. They found no association with stroke, but this was based on only 3 studies. They recommend that each of these individual studies has potential limitations, and our findings should be interpreted in that context. On the other hand, this represents the most complete worldwide evidence to date of the potential effects of red and processed meat consumption on incidence of coronary heart disease, stroke, and diabetes mellitus. A 2009 study in the Archives of Internal Medicine, Meat Intake and Mortality, a prospective study of over 500,000 people by Sinha et al., was more comprehensive in that it looked at many different conditions like cancer and cardiovascular disease, and it measured various causes of mortality as well as all-cause mortality. The 500,000 subjects were 51 to 70 years old and were from various geographic locations in the United States. They filled out a questionnaire that asked about their usual consumption of foods and drinks and portion sizes over the previous 12 months. Their diets were classified as high, medium, or low-risk meat diets based on the amount of red meat and white meat adjusted for energy. And they were split into 2 groups using median consumption as cut points. The study was prospective. It assessed diet first and then followed subjects for 10 years and recorded deaths and causes of death. It concluded that red and processed meat intakes were associated with modest increases in total mortality, cancer mortality, and cardiovascular disease mortality. In general, those in the highest quintile of red meat intake tended to consume a slightly lower amount of white meat, but a higher amount of processed meat than those in the lowest quintile. Subjects who consumed more red meat tended to be married, more likely to be of non-Hispanic white ethnicity, more likely to be a current smoker, have a higher body mass index, and a higher daily intake of energy, total fat, and saturated fat. Whereas they tended to have a lower education level, were less physically active, and consumed less fruits, vegetables, fiber, and vitamin supplements. They found an increased risk associated with accidental deaths with higher consumption of red meat in men, but not in women. It's hard to know how to interpret that. They found an inverse association for white meat intake. It appeared protective against total mortality, but there was a small increase in risk for cardiovascular disease mortality in men. The overall hazard ratios for men ranged from 1.06 to 1.31 for red meat, increasing steadily by quintile of meat intake, 0.9 to 0.92 for white meat, and 1.01 to 1.16 for processed meats. I know this has to be really exciting to listen to, but you can always download the written version and read it, in which case it's still going to be pretty boring. Continuing, the effect of red meat was greater than the effect of processed meats, which was opposite to the findings of the review in Circulation. They tried to correct for confounders. In the process, they found an increased risk with white meat consumption among never smokers and commented that the reason was not readily apparent. I suspect that the reason was that if you look at a large enough number of subgroups, you can always find an occasional chance correlation that is meaningless. Their data also showed that increased red meat consumption was correlated to smoking, lack of exercise, higher total calorie intake, higher body weight, higher total fat and saturated fat intake, lower intake of fruits. Didn't we already ride this pony? Vegetables and fiber and lower use of vitamin supplements. Could it be this constellation of factors rather than red meat itself that leads to higher mortality? They estimated that for overall mortality, 11% of deaths in men and 16% of deaths in women could be prevented if people decreased their red meat consumption to the level of intake in the first quintile. I don't think this can be determined from the data. They haven't reliably ruled out all possible confounding factors, and they don't have any direct evidence that taking people with a high red meat intake and reducing their intake improves their longevity. What about vegetarians? A recent study comparing vegetarians to non-vegetarians found that, in comparison with the regular meat eaters, mortality from ischemic heart disease was 20% lower in occasional red meat eaters, 34% lower in people who ate fish but not meat, 34% lower in lacto-vegetarians, and 26% lower in vegans. There were no significant differences between vegetarians and non-vegetarians in mortality from cerebrovascular disease, stomach cancer, colorectal cancer, lung cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, or all other causes combined. Meta-analysis of several prospective studies showed no significant differences in the mortality caused by colorectal, stomach, lung, prostate, or breast cancers and stroke between vegetarians and health-conscious non-vegetarians. In vegetarians, a decrease of ischemic heart disease mortality was observed probably due to lower total serum cholesterol levels, lower prevalence of obesity, and higher consumption of antioxidants. Very probably, an ample consumption of fruits and vegetables and not the exclusion of meat make vegetarians healthful. Conclusion: epidemiologic studies based on self-reporting and recall are not the most reliable form of evidence. What are we to make of all the confusing data? The evidence is far from conclusive, but it suggests that it would be wise to limit our consumption of red meat. The evidence is not strong enough to support recommendations that we give up red meat entirely or become vegetarians. Aristotle said, "Moderation in all things." Mom said, "Eat your vegetables." They were both right. And now the arena travels abroad. Today we go to Somalia, where Somali militants threaten World Cup TV viewers. Watching football in public is un-Islamic, the militants say. Somali militants have threatened football fans they will be publicly flogged or worse if they are caught watching the World Cup on TV. My comment: oh good, I just can't wait till America becomes a Christian nation so we can live with dignity like the Muslims. Continuing, gangs of Islamists are reported to be patrolling the areas they control, looking for people watching games. No wonder they're like the poorest, most downtrodden country on earth. Back to the article. Dedicated fans are watching matches in secret or in the few areas controlled by government forces. On Saturday, militants killed two people as they attacked a house where people were watching a game. My comment: ah, Islam, the religion of peace. A piece of arm here, a piece of leg there, and a crushed skull over yonder. Continuing, militant group Hizbul Islam also arrested 10 others at the house northeast of the capital of Mogadishu, where fans were watching the game between Argentina and Nigeria. A spokesman for the group, Sheikh Mohammed Abdi Aros, said the rest of Somalia should respect their ban on the World Cup. Comment: and if they don't, you'll kill them. That sounds reasonable enough to me. Continuing, they are warning all the youth of Somalia not to dare watch these World Cup matches. It is a waste of money and time, and they will not benefit anything or get any experience by watching madmen jumping up and down. One broadcaster has moved their operations to the fortified airport to protect their equipment from attack during the tournament. My comment: I want to live there. Now those people understand how to live life. Continuing, Dedicated football fans have few safe places to go if they want to watch Africa's first World Cup, with the Al-Qaeda-inspired group Al-Shabaab also announcing a ban. A cinema in the small part of the capital Mogadishu controlled by the government has become a popular place for football fans. One man who lives in the militant-controlled livestock market area of the city told the BBC he was watching Algeria versus Slovenia at home with his family. And he said, "I have one eye on the TV and the other on the door, and the sound is turned way down." The ban dates back to a law that was introduced by the Islamic Courts Union, who took control of much of Somalia for 6 months in 2006. It bans Somalis from all forms of entertainment considered un-Islamic under the court's strict interpretation of Sharia law, like video games and watching sports in public. My comment: I'll bet Europe just can't wait for Sharia to become the law in their countries. In fact, Sharia law exists in many European countries right now. Continuing, the BBC's Mohamed Olad Hassan says few individual Somalis can afford to have a satellite TV, so such public screenings are often the only way matches can be seen. In the Juba Valley, rebel militias went further, saying young men should not watch football, even in the privacy of their own homes, because it would distract them from pursuing holy jihad. My comment: now that would be a sin. No man should be distracted from pursuing holy jihad. Continuing, a private broadcaster moved its equipment from the rebel-held Bakara market to the heavily protected airport so it can continue broadcasting. They had to do it under the cover of darkness for fear of attack. Television was already under attack from the Islamist militants. Comment: I'll bet you just can't wait till they bring their lifestyle to a community near you. The article goes on: Al-Shabaab has declared Universal TV enemies of Islam because they allegedly broadcast pictures of the Prophet Muhammad. My comment: I didn't think it was legal to show shit on TV. Continuing, Al-Shabaab has already banned radio stations from playing music and threatened several radio stations. My comment: now we're getting down to the facts. The Abrahamic religions thrive on one thing: threats. The article concludes, the Islamic Courts Union was driven out by Ethiopian-backed government forces, but since then, rebel groups like Al-Shabaab have taken control of the south of Somalia and much of Mogadishu. The government, backed by African Union peacekeepers, controls only a small area of the capital. My final comment: Islam is the fastest-growing religion in the world, and it is no secret why. No, it's not because it is true. It is because of terrorism. It has worked for 1,400 years and will continue to work, as long as people refuse to stand up and fight them. And now for the final segment of the show, Famous Quotes. Raymond Nickerson is a research professor at Tufts University. He is a former senior vice president of Bolt, Beranek, and Newman, Inc., from which he is retired. His Ph.D. in experimental psychology is from Tufts University. He is a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the American Psychological Association, the Association for Psychological Science, the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society, and the Society of Experimental Psychologists. He was the founding editor of the Journal of Experimental Psychology, an annual publication of the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society. His research interests include cognition, human factors, and applied experimental psychology. His recent work at Tufts has focused primarily on probabilistic reasoning. And now for the quote from Raymond Nickerson. If one were to attempt to identify a single problematic aspect of human reasoning that deserves attention above all others, the confirmation bias would have to be among the candidates for consideration. It appears to be sufficiently strong and pervasive that one is led to wonder whether the bias by itself might account for a significant fraction of the disputes, altercations, and misunderstandings that occur among individuals, groups, and nations.
Are you ready, Bruce? Start walking.